Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday. Our show is presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD products curated for life. Vince Ferrara joins us normally on Mondays. Yesterday, Mike Vrabel spoke during his time slot, so we decided to get a full healthy dose of Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal in Knoxville. We would talk to him today. A tough loss for the Vols at home to Pittsburgh at Neyland Stadium. And now let's find out Vince, who was there. And by the way, I spoke with one Pasquale Sperduto last night. He said he saw you on Saturday at the Vols game.
Always great to see that fine Paisan. Yeah, that was fun. And, he got a chance to see some interesting football because it was entertaining from the get-go, the way things got started with fireworks, especially positive for Tennessee.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting to me is we knew about the offense when it came to Josh Heupel, and I'll tell you what, it looks like right now, and I know it's two games, something that we didn't really talk about Jeremy Pruitt. Like it seems like he's got this team at least early on. Like they're playing hard, they're going to battle to the end. I like what they're doing on offense. I think their biggest problem, I don't think you really need to. You don't need to build a rocket ship and be that smart to figure this out, is the most important position they haven't figured out. Like, I like what they're trying to do on offense, but gosh, until they get that no-brainer quarterback, that leader of that offense that I really like, I think this is what it's going to be, right? I mean, they're just going to struggle because I don't know who in the heck is going to be their quarterback all year. Do you?
Well, the whole year, no. I mean, I feel pretty good that it's going to be Hendon Hooker on Saturday against Tennessee Tech, but that's not what's going to decide the rest of the season.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't think the coaching staff knows yet because I feel like they had the expectation that Joe Milton would be able to hit some of those long balls. And if he does, you know, even a couple of them, your view of him is completely different. Obviously, he would have to have stayed healthy. But if he had stayed healthy, does he even come out of that game? Do they make a coaching change if he doesn't get hurt?
Right.
So, I think they still believe that Milton can make those plays. But you can't also dismiss them because, look, close football games, it's a couple of plays. That's the way the NFL is. That's the way competitive ball in college football is as well. A few plays will swing it. And, you know, one thing besides the throws, if Jalen Hyatt catches the first deep ball he throws, then maybe he throws the other ones after that. Now, there was a hold on that play, so that touchdown wouldn't have counted. But maybe he has more confidence moving forward, and maybe he connects on the five others that he overthrew not long after that. So there's just so many of those swing type of plays. And Darren, you referenced it too, that, you know, how connected this team looks right now under Josh Heupel versus Pruitt. They haven't figured out the quarterback position yet against who I think is a pretty good team in Pitt. They still put up 34 points and had a chance to win that game, even without having figured that out at that critical position. So I think that there's some encouragement to be taken from that if they do figure that out to some degree, even if it's not, you know, a Heisman Trophy candidate, if they figured out to some degree, and they cut out all of the other issues that were there, and they still had a chance to win with 13 penalties for 134 yards, three turnovers. Then they had the kick six that was called back due to a penalty. So many things, yet they were still able to put points up and have a chance to win. It's not roses and you know, butterflies and everything is perfect, but I think that's more of a sign of life and a pulse than they had last year.
Where is Bailey in all this? What's happened? That's really the one that's – is it just he doesn't fit what they're trying to do? I mean, it was more of a he fit Jeremy Pruitt's, which I don't know who would fit Jeremy Pruitt's offense. It was slow and, you know, about 100 years old. I mean, why is Bailey just the forgotten guy?
Oh, that's the fan question of the week, Darren. we won't put up polls on that bad boy because I think we know the answer to that. You know, I was thinking about this, I think it was yesterday. Harrison Bailey is more popular now that he's not playing and not in the picture than he was when he started three SEC games last year at over 70% completion. Like, people weren't happy with him. They're like, oh, he's not that good, and what, he's just like Gantano. And, you know, we heard a bunch of criticism while he was playing. Now everyone's screaming, why don't we play Bailey? Why can't we figure this out? You know, so that stuff is going to happen. But, you know, the whole fit thing is interesting because Heupel told us early on, and he told us multiple times, that his criteria – and athleticism and running ability was not at the top of their list of criteria. Remember, he coached Missouri's offense as the OC with Drew Locke. Drew Locke was a pocket quarterback. Now, he had some escapability. He made plays in extending them and making throws down the field with that cannon arm. But it's not like they're constantly running zone reads with him, and that was a key part of the offense. Not like they're using the quarterbacks now. Both with Milton and Hooker, they've honestly run them more than we expected because he hasn't always had that kind of quarterback, and he told us that that was not one of the highest priorities. So the whole fit thing, I think, is kind of a moving target. Here's what I think. I think they have used Milton and Hooker in that way for two reasons. One is because I don't think they have the full confidence in them being able to make all the throws in the pass game, one. And two, I think it's to help their offensive line. I think it's to adjust to the fact that they can't just line up and pass protect and do everything they want. They struggled more in that area in game two against Pitt than they did in game one. So I think this coaching staff adjusts, so I wouldn't say he doesn't fit. I think if he can make the throws and make the decisions, he's not a total statue back there, even though he's not as fast or as much of a running threat as Milton and Hooker. I think he could play. I just think they feel like, under the circumstances of everything involved, that they can make more something out of nothing because of other deficiencies than with those guys than Bailey. But I also don't think Hooker's leash, mentioned I think it'll be Hooker, I don't think Hooker's leash will be super long because he did turn the ball over a couple of times. And if Milton isn't ready to go against Tennessee Tech, honestly, either way, there's no reason why Harrison Bailey shouldn't play. But I think he could be closer to getting on the field. And then because no one's really separated, that could be a way to sort of prove himself, even if the coaching staff hasn't felt like he is the best guy at this point.
Yeah. Tennessee Tech this week, but it's going to set up the matchup, you know, at Florida.
Right.
And then we're going to really see, you know, kind of where they stack up against some of the better teams in the SEC, because right now, I mean, I think you feel pretty good about the loss to Pittsburgh. I don't really know. You were there. You tell me. I think Pittsburgh's okay. I think they're pretty good. I mean, I think they're an 8-4 team, probably. That's kind of what I see them as. How do you feel about seeing when now that you've seen them up close and personal? You just kind of laid out some things that played out. I mean, you would not think that Tennessee would have been in that game with all those things that happened, the penalties and the turnovers and this and that and the injuries, but yet they were. So overall, what did you think of Pitt?
I think they're a little bit above average team. Even in conference play, it is as suspect in some areas as the ACC looks. I don't know that they can't still get some things done in that conference because I don't know that there's a bunch of great teams there either.
Yeah.
So I think Pitt had to adjust to Tennessee's speed and athleticism early. And so in some ways, maybe Tennessee, even though Tennessee isn't a great team by any means, I think that might have presented some more challenges versus teams they're familiar with and maybe they're on par with in terms of types of athletes. But Kenny Pickett, to me, is so good. I think he made a great decision to go back to college. It was interesting on the TV broadcast when I went back and rewatched that they mentioned the close relationship and friendship that Pickett now has with Peyton Manning and how he kind of guided him and talked to some GMs for him and asked what his stock was. And with some of that information, he decided to go back to Pitt. So I think that Pitt is an above-average team. So I think you can take some positives from that game and because of the opponent itself. So I think Tennessee, lot to do. We'll see. But you know, here's another little thing. Josh Heupel's teams at UCF kind of racked up a lot of penalties the last couple of years. So we gotta see if this isn't something that is a trend continuing. Maybe it's a little bit of, you know, so many different guys in these positions with a new coaching staff, and some of them breaking, and some of them have to kind of get rid of their old habits. We'll see, but that's something else to kind of watch in terms of the penalties.
We're talking to Vince Ferraro, talking University of Tennessee, as we do each week with him. And Vince, I got to give them credit. When they were down by two touchdowns, I thought it would be, you know, I didn't think they'd be able to get back to where they got, which was really a legit chance to tie the game late. I mean, right on the doorstep there. So tell me what you thought of the biggest play of the game, where they have the fourth and one and don't get it.
Well, you're right, Willie. That was huge. And actually, in connection with that, a lot of people have talked about Josh Heupel not challenging a iffy spot on a Hendon Hooker run just before that, where it looked like he picked up enough for the first down. That made it third down. They were able to get a run to the one, and that set up that fourth and one. If that review is challenged and won, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't, who knows with review, then you get the first down, and now you have four downs to get in versus being in that situation. But on that call, a lot of the discussion has been fans really angry and scratching their heads that Tennessee is in the gun at the goal line on needing 1 yard. Now, that's not new in football, but it really tweaks a lot of people, some yep. analysts and a lot of fans. Why would you do that instead of getting under center? And so that's been a lot of topic of conversation. You had a third-string running back in Jalen Wright in there because you didn't have your starting running back and Tyon Evans, who missed the ball game, and then Jabari Small got hurt during the game. So now you're relying on a third-string freshman running back to be your guy. So there's questions about why you're in that kind of position at that point. Plus, you normally take advantage of the run game by spreading teams out. Now you're doing something out of character and clogging up the box and expecting to find a lane to get that inexperience back through. But maybe the biggest thing is, I don't think, even though Josh Heupel didn't specifically say it, kind of interpreted in terms of lack of execution in some plays, I think Hendon Hooker needs to keep that ball with that end crashing in on that play. And to me, he walks into the end zone over that right side. And I think he didn't read that play right. So I think that's part of their issue. But it's multiple layers that broke down there, formation in numerous ways, and then obviously that decision by Hooker. So a lot broke down, and that was obviously huge.
It's a great discussion, and I think it's something you get a lot, is what are the trade-offs when you run that kind of offense? And it's usually not designed to have the great power game in the short yardage situation. So how well do those plays work? It's a really good question. I think there'll probably be a lot of coaches like Josh Heupel that will defend themselves and say, you know what, it's not conventional, but the shotgun has worked this percentage of the time. It's an easy thing to say in the moment, don't you think?
Right, and absolutely, Willie. And look, this isn't new. This isn't exclusive to Josh Heupel in this offense. People used to complain about it with Butch Jones because they would do it. And sometimes it worked. Sometimes they got stuffed and it made people angry. When it works, then you're all right with it. But when it doesn't, then everyone's really upset. There's a lot of other coaches in college football that still do it. And even David Cutcliffe has done that for a while. And he's obviously a brilliant offensive mind. And look, we saw the Raiders last night stuffed with a quarterback sneak. So there's no guarantee that you go under center that you're going to be able to get it in. And then, you know, another factor is if you never are under center, now you're going under center when it's the most critical time. And I've seen fumbles in those situations, college and in high school, when guys that never go under center decide to do it then. So sometimes it's better just to stick with what you do best. But I like spreading people out in that situation because that's more your normal offense.
We're talking to Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the Sports Animal, up in Knoxville. So even though it was Tennessee Tech this weekend, you mentioned the Florida game coming up in a couple of weeks. With Florida playing Alabama, what are some things that maybe you'll be looking at just to kind of get a gauge of what the Gators actually are as they go up against the best team?
Well, it is a really interesting difference in how the two are entering their game next week, right? You couldn't have a bigger difference. Florida has to deal with Alabama and all the physicality ramifications that typically come the week after you play Alabama. Oh, by the way, they're the best team. While Tennessee is playing not only an FCS school, they're playing unfortunately right now, a bad FCS school. They got housed by Furman last week, hasn't gotten off to a very good start. So that opens up a great opportunity for Tennessee to be in a much different situation in terms of health coming out of this game. Now, Tennessee needs it because the list is long of guys that have either missed games, won or both games, or got banged up last game and are still in question. That includes Milton. That includes Tyon Evans and Jabari Small, their top two running backs. Jalen Hyatt, who dropped the first touchdown in the end zone. There's just a long list of guys that have missed time that this team doesn't have the depth to overcome. So can that game allow them to hold those guys out and get healthier for the Florida game versus an Alabama game where you may lose even more guys? So I think that's definitely advantage Tennessee. But from Florida standpoint, I want to see if Florida can handle Alabama's pass rush. Because if they can do that, then that's going to give you a lot of confidence that O-line can hold up against a lot of other teams, including Tennessee. I also want to see if there's any more clarity at the quarterback position with their two quarterbacks. They are still unsettled. I'm not a fan of Emory Jones. I know he's had some great plays, and he's had, I think, four interceptions on the year, too. So does one guy totally outplay the other to where maybe there is more clarity at that quarterback position at that point? And then, obviously, how does Florida's defense hold up against what Alabama can do offensively with their balance and Bryce Young and everybody? So it'll be really interesting and cannot be any more different in how these two teams are going into that game in Gainesville in a couple of weeks that I hope to be at, but we're still working that out.
So as you go through this and evaluate coaching, you know, there are a lot of different layers to that, and it's still very early in the season. But as this team sits at 1-1, you're seeing Josh Heupel after a loss with injuries, you know, dealing with you know, penalties, all these things that we've talked about. What's kind of your gauge on how he handles things, especially when he's talking to you all and going through all of this? Is he still very early in his tenure?
I'd say overall it's still a positive, in not only in the way he's talked to us, but in what some of the things that you can point to coaching and how they've handled things. Overall, it's still positive. Not perfect by any means, but I still think overall a positive. The Bowling Green game's game. We talked about it last week, a lot of things that were positive in how they handled things with coaching. Last game, the tempo wasn't there. Obviously, you're starting to wonder whether they picked the right quarterback or not. That still needs to play out. They didn't come out as a completely different team in the second half like they did in game one. Also, the not challenging that run that could have given them a first down. And then also that decision at the goal line, which is pretty critical. And here's another thing that people have pointed to that they weren't happy with in terms of coaching, and that's final few seconds of the first half, you're back in your own end, and rather than taking a knee and hitting the half, they gave the ball to Jabari Small, who was their only starting, one of their top two backs that was healthy. He gets hurt on that play. Rather than, why run him there, take a knee, you're already thin at that position, and now you have to go to your third-string freshman running back. So that's another thing that people have pointed out. I thought at times he's been in the post game where maybe seemed a little bit, slightly annoyed. But I think he's defending his team. I think Darren pointing out and that they're playing hard for him. There is a connectivity with the players and the coaches. Talking to Tyler Barron yesterday, I asked him, "What do you think the response of this team is going to be?" And he said, "We're going to respond better than we have since I've been here after any loss. I'll stand by that." And he said, "We're a completely different team." And Matthew Butler had kind of a similar message today. So I think this team still has belief, and I think they still trust this coaching staff. Now, eventually, if the L's pile up, then it's going to be a hard time. It's going to be hard to keep them. But I think the coaching staff, from that standpoint, you got to give them a positive because they've held this probably pretty fragile bunch together, and they're still fighting for them.
I made a mental note to ask you about this. Watching the Sunday night game, there were three guys on the Rams that are from the mid-state, played high school football around here. Jalen Ramsey, Bryson Hopkins, Van Jefferson. Obviously, T. Higgins is making an impact in the NFL with the Bengals. And my point with that is none of those guys went to UT. They're from this state, and they didn't go to UT. Higgins was committed and then ultimately went to Clemson. And Josh Heupel, like every coach before him, gets hired and says that we're going to emphasize keeping talent from inside the state and getting talent from the state. When you look around the league and you see the NFL and you see these guys that are coming out of the state of Tennessee and making a name from themselves in the NFL, how noticeable is that with within Knoxville of fans going like, man, it just sucks that those guys didn't come through here at Tennessee? And do you see, obviously it's all going to be based on what happens on the field, but do you truly believe that that is something that Josh Heupel and his staff are trying to emphasize of, we got to keep these guys in state?
I do, and some of that goes back to Butch Jones. That's how far back some of those issues in recruiting were, like a T. Higgins and others. So it's something that has plagued Tennessee as a program for the last couple of coaches. And they're behind the eight ball right now. Obviously, the NCAA thing hanging over them, another transition. So they got a long way to go in order to completely beef up that recruiting class in 2022 and 2023. But I know for a fact they're putting in work locally because I call high school games every week. We do a game of the week, me and Don Mahoney, former Tennessee offensive line coach. And so I talked to every single one of these coaches, and I asked them, are you hearing from Tennessee? And all of them say yes, even if I don't have players. In fact, Josh Heupel was making the rounds at some high schools last Friday after they played on Thursday. And they invite the coaches to their practices. Anytime you and your staff want to come watch practice, when you have an opportunity, you're always welcome. And that's different than it has been. So they're working at it, and it's going to take time. They're going to have to win, at least win enough to show some progress, and then turn the page on the NCAA stuff. it's not just the local players in Knoxville, Chase. I think it's in-state players, too, that they're going to have to cash in on because of the wealth of talent in the mid-state that's only growing. So it is something they're working on, but I think it's going to take time before they start reaping the rewards of some positivity and the legwork that they're trying to put in right now.
Vince, good stuff as always. Appreciate it. Have a great week, and we'll do it again next week.
All right. You guys appreciate it. Thanks for having me. By the way, talk to WWE superstar Bianca Belair this morning. We'll run that this week on our station at some point. So you can follow me on Twitter at Vince Sports. I have the date and time of that bad boy and put a video up as well.
You are the EST of the sports animal, just so you know.
You guys are the EST of sports talk shows.
Thank you very much.
By the way, did you watch Peyton and Eli last night?
Oh, it's unbelievable. Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. That should be on ABC and ESPN, and then the main broadcast should be on ESPN2 and ESPN+ moving forward. It was awesome. I taped it because there's so much there that you miss because it's just constant. It's like the film room for the college football national championship. Maybe I'm a junkie, but it was all that info and insight with some humor, too. Just beautifully done by those guys.
Yeah. I think it was better than the coaches' room. Nothing wrong with the coaches' film room, but, man, I thought it was way better than that. But anyway, hey, good stuff. Thank you, and have a good week.
All right, you do the same. Thanks, guys.
Vince Ferrara at Vince Sports on Twitter. He's with the Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville. Does a great job with him and a part of the Vols broadcast crew. And they're, of course, be hosting Tennessee Tech on Saturday. Hey, week one may be over, but the season is just getting started at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. And to kick off week two, DraftKings is giving all new customers a can't-miss offer. Yes, listen to this. All you have to do is just bet $1 on any football game this week. Yeah, $1. That's it on any game this week. And you know what they're going to do for you? They're going to take care of you because on any game, you bet $1, you're going to receive $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet at least $1 on any football game. So keep that in mind going into week two. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. All you have to do is download that DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that promo code 1025GAME to receive $200 in free bets when you place $1 on any football game. That promo code, again, 1025GAME, to get your $200 in free bets instantly this week at DraftKings Sportsbook. The official sports betting partner of the NFL, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.